This story begins with a wedding invitation.
Dearest friends and family, we're writing because many of you have begun asking what we'd like for wedding gifts. Instead of something for ourselves, we'd like to ask you to give a gift to people who are in much greater need than we are. A gift that will only cost you 34 cents. The gift we ask is that you write a letter to your congresspersons about the brutal suppression of a practice that we have both benefited from tremendously, called Falun Gong.
Emily Kudelowski is a 23-year-old freelance editor. In the year 2000, Emily graduated from Swarthmore College, one of the top three liberal arts colleges in the United States. Her bachelor's degree was in comparative religion. In college, Emily sang in the school's choir, played the oboe in a chamber music ensemble, and was captain of her intramural soccer team. She graduated high in her class with a near-perfect grade point average and was inducted into the Phi Beta Kappa Honor System for her scholarship. Matt Kudelowski is 27. He is part of the faculty at Swarthmore College, where he directs the college's writing center. He is also a sports writer. He was captain of the U.S. baseball ambassador's team to China in 1994 and was named MVP of the Beijing International Tournament for his pitching. He played on his college's ice hockey and baseball teams and has served as an ice hockey coach and instructor. Matt and Emily came to know each other when they were both students at Swarthmore College. They share a lot of common interests, such as hiking and canoeing, listening to music, reading, writing, community service, and many other activities. In the spring of 1999, they decided to practice Falun Gong. Falun Gong is a mind-body discipline from ancient China. It is also known as Falun Dafa. Matt and Emily first learned about Falun Gong in 1999 at a Chinese New Year's festival hosted by the University of Pennsylvania. They found themselves drawn to a booth on Falun Gong.
A letter they had at the table, and read it over, and I thought, wow, this looks really profound. I also had tried a different type of qigong before for a back problem, and it helped a little bit, but the back problem recurred. I could tell it wasn't really removing the illness at its root, and so I wasn't completely happy with that. Also, it was costing me a lot of money, and Falun Dafa was free, which looked great.
That this was something very different than the other types of qigong I'd studied. It wasn't just about health and fitness, but it was very clear up front that this practice was about becoming a better person. It was about self-improvement, self-cultivation. And it had at its core these three principles of truth, compassion, and forbearance. And that really resonated with me.
Lee Randazzo has been a friend of Matt's since they were young children.
Since he's been practicing Falun Dafa, he's become so much more of a compassionate person. Really going out of his way to help other people, and also he's become calmer. He's even had a much calmer and quieter tone to his voice.
And Matt and I really, very, very rarely argue about anything because we follow these principles and always try to be good to one another and to those around us.
Janine Gibbons, who's a close friend of Emily's from college.
Emily's really the only friend that I have that I feel like I can talk to about things that, you know, matter to me, whether it's life issues, questions of spirituality, and she's just one of the most tolerant people that I've really ever come across. So.
After Matt graduated from college in the spring of 1999, he traveled to China on a one-year scholarship to study the Chinese language in Beijing at Tsinghua University. One of China's top universities, it is also known as the MIT of China because of its strength in the fields of science and engineering.
And I had been practicing Falun Dafa with students, with some of the staff at the university, with some of the graduate students, and even with some of the faculty, some of the professors there in engineering and physics, something in economics, all practiced as well. And they made a very deep impression on me. They were just the kindest people, the nicest people I think I've ever met in my entire life. And that came across, even though there was a little bit of a cultural barrier because my Chinese wasn't so good at that time. Well, still not. But their kindness was just so evident and just so powerful. When we shared some common goals of becoming better people through the practice of Falun Dafa. So we were really bonded, practicing in the morning, in the park, meditating, doing some exercises, getting together in the evening to read some of the books by Mr. Li Hongzhi, the founder of Falun Dafa.
Dr. Ellen Ross, a scholar of religion on Falun Gong.
If one looks at what Falun Gong is about, it's about nurturing life, nurturing connection. And the very idea of people gathering together, large numbers of people to practice meditation together, to practice exercises together, to think about truth and compassion and tolerance or forbearance, to think about that in community, to practice that in community, that seems so fundamental to nurturing a society.
But then suddenly, overnight, the practice was banned on July 22nd officially. And all of a sudden, that park where so many of us had gathered during the week, there'd be as many as 40 of us on weekday mornings, and then on the weekends, as many as 400 of us at the university together. Suddenly, those were completely cleared out. There was nobody there. Instead, there was a big sign posted on a tree that was basically an edict saying, you better not practice Falun Dafa here, it's illegal. You better not promote the practice, which meant discussing with other people. You better not distribute any literature about the practice, that is, books. You better not appeal against this ban, or else that'll also get you in trouble. And I was just utterly shocked and really, really disappointed that this sort of thing was happening here in the 21st century, basically.
It's very sad, it's frightening, it's terrifying that we live in a world where a government feels threatened by this and has cracked down in the way that the Chinese government has. I see the Chinese government sees this as a threat, not as something that builds community. Look at the people who practice it. These are people from all walks of life, all ages, people who are clearly not, this is not a political gathering. I look at the public way that Falun Dafa has been practiced in China. It's not hidden, it's not secretive, it's not about accumulating money, it's about people living holistically, people nurturing themselves, trying to be healthy, trying to think about what matters in life, trying to live a life of virtue, a life of ethical concern and care for others.
The first thing that happened was my classmates who were at the university, the Chinese students who practiced, including the faculty and staff there, began to disappear. Suddenly, some of them were being dragged from their dormitory rooms, arrested. Some of them were thrown in jail, I later learned. Some of them were sent to labor camps within a few weeks for not giving up their practice when they were asked to. And some of these people were very close friends of mine, and it was very painful and also scary to see a government using its economic and military might to intimidate peace-loving people who are practicing a spiritual belief that makes them better people. And so I was even impacted in other ways too, that I began to be followed. I had footage of cameras rolling on me sometimes when I come out of the building by undercover police. I was followed on a few occasions and had my picture taken. And around our campus, there was suddenly a really startling police presence, a military presence. There were people driving around with machine guns around the campus, looking for anybody who dared to practice Falun Dafa in public. You know, this was really something I couldn't believe. I couldn't even imagine if somebody told me this was going to happen to kind, you know, peace-loving people who were outstanding students and outstanding professors, just so nice. And since then, I've lost all touch with everybody because all of the students and faculty there who persisted in their practice have since been expelled. They've been thrown out, they've been fired from their jobs, and I think the majority of them are now in labor camps and in jail. And some of them have even been tortured.
Can you tell me about your closest friend?
Yeah, my closest friend was a professor there who sent to so-called re-education classes where they tried to brainwash him, to get him to renounce his beliefs. And he refused for that. He was beaten. After he was beaten, they sent him to labor camp. And I've since read about reports of him being very badly tortured. it's just too much. It's really absurd.
I remember when Matt sent me those emails from China describing the people. This person who was tortured is actually the person he talked about the most. It's just the kindest person he had ever met. So it's just unbelievable that he's been put through all of this. It's utterly irrational. There's no way to justify it or make sense of it at all.
After Falun Gong grew larger than the number of Chinese Communist Party members, the party's leadership deemed Falun Gong a threat, even though the party had supported it before. Human rights groups report that since Falun Gong was banned in July of 1999, at least 300 people who practice Falun Gong have been killed in police custody. Besides the deaths in custody, at least 100,000 people have been illegally detained for practicing Falun Gong. Over 20,000 have been sentenced to labor camps without trial and are subject to routine beating and torture. And thousands of healthy Falun Gong practitioners have been forced into mental hospitals where they are injected with harsh sedatives and toxic drugs. One question that often puzzles people is why? Why would authorities ever do such a thing to a group of ordinary, peaceful citizens? Dr. Mark Wallace, a scholar of philosophy and religion on Falun Gong.
I don't think of Falun Gong as a political activity. And in my study of new religious movements, you oftentimes have something called scapegoating, where a government can't solve its own problems. And so it looks to someone, either an insider or an outsider within its own culture, and it blames that person or that group for its problems. So what's happened to Falun Gong and its practitioners is that it's become, I think, the convenient scapegoat for the Chinese government's many problems. And so its practitioners get blamed for causing social disorder. But the practitioners are not political and are not trying to cause social disorder. But there's a lot of disorder right now in China. And so the Chinese government, instead of trying to solve the problem in a thoughtful, nonviolent way, instead blames this group, practitioners of Falun Gong, and it describes to them the cause of the society's problem.
So to make a long story short, I decided to give up my scholarship to Tsinghua. It was a difficult decision, but I felt that I could do more good back in the United States than I could in China under the persecution. Seeing the injustice around me, I had a burning desire to do something about it, to try to help these people. And the only way I knew how was to come back to the United States and tell people what I'd seen and appeal to their kind hearts and ask them to do something about it, to stand in solidarity with these very kind people in China who were being persecuted.
After Matt came back to the U.S., he became a volunteer advocate for human rights in China, especially through working with the Falun Dafa Information Center, a nonprofit organization. He has traveled to various institutions to lecture about Falun Gong and the persecution, including Harvard University and the University of Pennsylvania. He has written speeches for delegates to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, for congressional hearings, and for events at Freedom House and Asia Society. Major journals, newspapers, television, and radio stations have interviewed Matt, and he has run dozens of seminars and workshops about Falun Gong and the human rights abuses.
So the wedding was just one of many things we saw as an opportunity to help those people suffering in China. It was very natural, having been through that.
I had invited a good friend to be a bridesmaid in my wedding, and she is originally from China, and her brother is still there. He was sentenced to over a year in labor camp in China for practicing Falun Gong. So really affected her family very much and affected us very much. And then on top of that, some of our guests that we had invited to the wedding have family also in China being persecuted. So this is really an issue that's deeply intertwined with our lives and with the lives of many Americans. It's not just something Chinese people should be concerned about. We really felt strongly that we've got to do something about this. So we asked our guests
to write letters to their congresspersons and representatives and to put a stop to this persecution.
The bridesmaid Emily mentioned is Ying Chun.
Ying's whole family practices Falun Gong. Her parents played in China's most prestigious Philharmonic Orchestra for 33 years before they retired. They played their beautiful music at Matt and Emily's wedding, too. For the Chun family, the Chinese regime's persecution of Falun Gong has been devastating. In June of 2000 in Beijing, Ying Chun's brother and mother were dragged from their beds in the middle of the night by over a dozen police, and their home was completely ransacked without a warrant or any reason given. Ying's mother was detained for 30 days and then set free, but her brother still has not been released. He has been tortured and beaten in custody.
We have freedom, which is the greatest gift. But why not ask people to instead of giving us something, give a hope for freedom, give a chance to people on the other side of the world who don't really have a voice at this time. They could be that voice by writing letters to congressmen, friends, and others.
Some of their friends and family were so touched by the idea that they shared the letter with local papers, and the local papers, in turn, were moved by it as well and decided to publish it.
One after another, people recognized immediately what the issue was, that this was a case of injustice. This was a case of peaceful citizens being violated. And people really identified with the cause. And like Emily, you said, yeah, they were just very enthusiastic and supportive of it. And people asked them, what more can I do? What else can we do? And, mm-hmm. and tell us more about this. Tell us about the practice itself and things. So that was, it was really heartwarming.
I can feel that Emily and Matt are using their hearts to write the letter. And they didn't ask for any material things, but ask for the people's support to Falun Gong. And this is very powerful and striking to me.
I think it's very touching that they would use something so close and dear to them to let people more people know about this situation. And I think it speaks on how powerful Falun Gong has been for them in their personal lives, that they would be moved to do this.
Indicated to all of their friends and family why they were getting married, what was important to them, and it sort of just assured us, I think, that, you know, their love and their relationship would outlast, you know, any difficulty or situation that they came across. So I was really excited to get their request, and I think all of my friends were too. It was different, but
I come from a strong Christian family and was brought up with some just outstanding values as a result of that. And my parents and my younger brother, the three of them, from the rest of my family, they've recognized, I think, from the start what a special practice this is and really been behind me and supportive of it all the way, especially in regard to the persecution in China. They've been just so sympathetic and so concerned with what's happening there. So, for example, my father at his church started a petition and a letter-writing campaign to help end the persecution in China. And over 80 people from the church, in the end, wrote letters to the Chinese embassy, to our president, and to others through Amnesty International to raise awareness. Because in their minds, the people who practice Falun Dafa are just, they like to say, beautiful people, very kind people. And they're very saddened to see these people persecuted for their beliefs.
I was very impressed that Matt and Emily made public and very concrete their desire for practitioners of Falun Gong to be supported in their attempt to achieve peace and well-being. So in his wedding invitation, he asked us to write letters and notes of support for people who are suffering persecution. And I was very moved by that because it expressed to me Matt's heartfelt commitment to a way of life and to groups of people that are trying to make for a better world. And to use his wedding as an occasion to celebrate this new way of life, to me was a wonderful moment. So I was very happy to get his wedding invitation.
To me, it was really a beautiful and very poignant thing that they, at this time of great joy in their lives, they were thinking about other people who were committed to living lives of well-being, but who were being kept from doing that and who were suffering persecution and harassment from just trying to practice the things that give them well-being. It was a very beautiful thing. It was very sad to realize that this is the world we live in, but very hopeful to know that these two magnificent young people were trying to move into a hopeful future.
Emily and Matt were married on January 14, 2001, in a chapel in Rochester, New York. Many of their guests weren't, but it was the most beautiful wedding they had ever heard from before.
In taking you as my wife, Emily, I vow to be a source of goodness and strength in your life, nurturing your desire to embody the great law of truth, compassion, tolerance. I will honor, love, and care for you, in gain and in loss, in comfort and in hardship, for better and for worse, as long as we both shall live.
During the course of this filming, some people in China who practice Falun Gong heard about Matt and Emily's story. They sent the following message.
We'd like to extend our best wishes to this union between husband and wife. And we would also like to express our heartfelt gratitude to these two young people for their tireless efforts in helping the Chinese people regain their human rights. The world is a more wonderful place because there are people like them who believe so firmly in truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. Their selfless actions give us hope for a brighter future.